Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Welcome to Party Friday, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, The Truth Straight Up, brought to you by...
The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Chinese Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, HappyTrees.co, and Denver Cenogenics, and Dr. Julie McCallan. Holy cow, I was making the list of all the stuff to talk about today.
Yeah,
and
you were.
You know, at 3:30, we're going to have Daniel Greenfield. We've had him on before. He's great, with the Daniel Horowitz Freedom Center. He's got a great column about that. You guys, we talked a little bit about it, that one of the FBI agents who was investigating Trump for Russia collusion, of which there was none and they knew it, was himself arrested with colluding with the Russians.
The big question is, who gave him up?
Well, yeah, big question, who gave him up? And the reality there is, it seems to me that, like, you know, everybody was colluding with Russia except for Donald Trump, right?
So that particular oligarch, Oleg Deripaska, they all work for.
Right.
Everyone did.
Right, right. And it's interesting. And he's going to kind of lay out, I mean, it's not just this one guy. It's this whole scheme.
Well, it's a whole rotten FBI.
Look at it, them coming up with the Russia hoax. You know, one of my questions is, why Russia? Why not? Whatever, right? And this kind of explains it, that you have this entire deep state corrupt collusion going on with Russia. So they're like, I don't, let's accuse Trump of it because we know how it works. We'll just say he's doing what we did.
And a lot of them were also in the back pocket of the Chinese communists. And Chinese communists always want us to be looking to Russia.
Right. If we have time, we're going to play the Paul Pelosi tapes. Kind of graphic. I'll warn you about that. And to a certain extent, they raised to me the big question, why did the government lie about who opened the door? I don't understand that. And there are some weird things about it too, so we'll talk about that. But first, I just saw Charlie Kirk with the Daily Wire. His headline was, "The Republican Party hates you."
Yes.
The results are in from the Republican Party national chairperson election. Ronna McDaniel won re-election. Despite swearing she was not going to seek a fourth term, she won re-election to a fourth term. Overwhelmingly, I think the vote
111
to Harmeet Dhillon 51, Mike Lindell 4, and Lee Zeldin 1. Despite the fact that 90%, now I'm not sure where Kirk got this number.
I've seen polls.
Right. That of the Republican voters, like us, people like us, wanted a change because you know what? She's been losing. Why do we want to keep her? You know, that's whatever. You know, Hackett is gone from the Denver Broncos. If you're a coach and you keep losing, you get a new coach. Even if it's not all that coach's fault, why would we think that coach is going to bring anything along? Why do we think?
Because she brings lots of money. And apparently that's
well,
all.
Well, they need that for their luxury trips and stuff.
Well, yeah, I found out, you know, Randy was telling us, man, it's expensive to be an RNC member. It's right, because the hotel costs $1,275 a night, no breakfast included.
So if you're on McDaniel's, you got to raise a lot of money to pay for all of your expenses there.
Well, no, they have to pay that themselves.
No, I know, but I mean, she's got more expenses. So, I mean, never
mind have to pay
those pesky elections. Well, that's what I mean. I'm joking, but that's what she's raising the money for. So I want to talk about that a little bit, too. Randy said they're still voting on some of the down ticket items. So he said if he has time, he'll pop in, although he kind of indicated he might not. So we'll keep our eyes open for it. But if you want to call in on this, 888-627-6008. You want to just go ahead and comment in the chat section, we'll read that. Or if you want to go ahead and
raise your hand
or just turn your mic
or
on.
Or if you're Jacob and you can't figure it out, just
like Julie, yeah, just go ahead and talk. But on this, I mean, so Chuck, I'll just ask you first. What do you make? Number one, what do you make of it? And number two, of Ronna McDaniel winning, and not just winning. I mean, I think there were people saying, oh, no, Mike Lindell and Harmeet Dhillon are going to split the vote. Didn't even come close, right?
Well, it didn't matter if they did, because it was one of those you had to get a majority and one or the other would drop out to face off against.
But I mean, she won by 57 votes. I mean, the two of them combined didn't quite have that. So, I mean, what do you make of the win? And then what, where do you think we go from here?
I make it of what it's true of Colorado. It's true everywhere. The donors control the party. The average person is unimportant to the Republican Party. They like McConnell, he did not try to win the Senate. He just tried to make sure he was ahead of whatever right. Republicans were. I mean, honestly, he took money away from key races in order to bring it up to Alaska. So his favorite Republican would beat his unfavored Republican. So that's not a guy who's trying to win, and neither are these people. I mean, she couldn't win it. She didn't know how to win.
Right. Well, and this from Leo, very depressing, trying to decide between eating broken glass or throwing knives at my feet. I just go with alcohol, Leo. I just go straight to skip that.
Wait till you've taken the alcohol.
Yeah. There's a couple of things, though. I'm going to throw a little wrench into this. Okay. I agree. And clearly they didn't listen to the voters. But Donald Trump, you get the impression, at least his people, although he stayed neutral, people who were known to be his people were openly supporting Ronna McDaniel and, you know, her pick for vice chair, things like that. Where Ron DeSantis came out a couple of days ago and clearly endorsed Harmeet Dhillon. So, you know, now I don't know how the voters would go on that, but it is kind of clear. I don't know that you can read this as a win for Trump, because I don't think the establishment people like Trump in particular either. No. Although Ronna McDaniel was one of his picks.
But he's famous for picking the wrong people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's Christopher Wray was his pick. Yeah, I mean, Bill Barr was his pick. Jeff Sessions was his pick. Yeah, Mike Pence was his pick. All right,
bad picks.
Well, do you read anything into that, though? Do you think the people there were going along with Trump, or they were just going along with
this? I get the feeling that the RNC has been a rotting corpse for a long time. It's known for being establishment. It's known for being, the Mitch McConnell wing of the Republican Party.
The wing, it's no different, I think, than the Colorado Republican Party. I think it appears, because Randy said some of those people, the people who voted, there were 168 Republican committee members, two from each state, and then they're bonus members, and it's convoluted. But he said some of them have been there a long, 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 long time, right? And it seems to me that there are some of them, just like here, who are more concerned about maintaining their little piece of the pie, their little piece absolutely. Of the power, than actually winning elections. And I think that, you know, as I say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I don't know. Sometimes they say the right thing about ballot harvesting and things like that. But again, if you're Ronna McDaniel, I don't know. I don't see any reason to think she's going to do anything differently in 2024. Now, maybe Trump will light a fire under her. I don't know. Or maybe Trump will just work around him. You know, I mean, sometimes that's what candidates do here in Colorado.
Well, quite frankly, the RNC, other than it being a conduit of establishment money, does nothing. They bring some lawsuits after they finally got after the consent decree they were under for 20 years at their own volition. It's just sad. I mean, sad. You know, a lot of times you're sorry you're a Republican, and this is one of them.
This is, will be a little on a lighter note, Leo. So Dr. Donna said one of the worst traits about Trump, his picks stink, like picking one's nose would be seen. And then Leo says, Dr. D, remember, you can pick your friends, you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. apropos of nothing, but to me, it's kind of... Well, I don't know if it's depressing. What's depressing is once again the voters being ignored, the will of the people, you know, being ignored. And granted, you would think the people elect the Republican committee members, but a lot of that is insider stuff as well,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And so it's all these insiders. And you know, I don't know, the RNC, they're going to try to raise money from people. I don't think that this is going to help there, but they don't
No, you have to understand, they'll raise plenty of money, but it's not from you and me.
Right.
I mean, you and me are never going to send any money to the RNC, but then again, we never did send much money to the RNC. I think I did one year.
Right.
But who they're going to get money from are all the, you know, defense contractors and everyone else who love the Ukrainian war and, you know,
status quo
people who are.
Well, how do you think this bodes then going into 2024?
Bad.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say that?
Because I think if the Republicans are going to win, they're going to have to, you know, fight differently. And you don't, if you want to fight differently, you don't bring the same fighter back.
Right. So, now, on the other hand, I'm playing the devil's advocate again here.
Okay.
Sundance at the Conservative Treehouse pointed out that Harmy Dillon wasn't really that much outside of the club, right? That she was still.
Well, I got that. I think she might have sold out if she was, if she got in. I mean, I don't doubt that, that, Harmy Dillon isn't any, you know, raging outsider, but even she can't, you know.
I mean, yeah, she couldn't even make it exactly make much of a dent. And, you know, Mike Lindell got four.
Good for him.
And then Lizelle, then I don't know, maybe he voted for himself. I don't know who all could vote. But I you're right, that says a lot.
Who wanted to pay $1,300 a night for a room out in California.
Well, and I talked briefly, I texted back and forth with Randy, and he said he wasn't particularly surprised at the outcome, although I think he made it clear he was, at least when he talked to us, leaning toward endorsing Harmy Dillon, and actually she had him on her endorsement page.
She didn't. I actually
she didn't. Okay.
If she did, she took it down, because I checked that too after Dave told us that.
Well, but I mean, Randy was leaning toward that, but he said it's be curious to see how he voted. But he said he thought it would be closer. Yeah. He said he was surprised at how what the split was. And this is Dr. Donna. Larimer is attempting to run establishment folks. One of their goals is to make candidates pay to the party 7 to 8% the cost of their campaign, pay to play. Well, that's what we talked about that on the show. That's what this one guy. Well, Patrick somebody, I forget his name. He's a consultant out of, guess where, El Paso County. That's what he wants to do. He wants to get rid of the caucus system, the assembly system, and basically say, if you want to run for any kind of seat in Colorado, what you have to do is pay. And it was like, we're not talking a little bit. It's like $20 to a senator. Yeah, $250,000 to run for like governor or Senate. I'm like, well, that'll certainly make it, you know, Democratic. That'll certainly be for the people, by the people, of the people. I mean, it's, if it's already not like the rich guys, do you know what I mean? So we got to kibosh that, but that's what they want, right? Because they want the money basically. And if you have a candidate paying you, you know, all of this money, I guess I'd be for that if I were a chairperson too. We should make them pay us and pay our salaries. Hopefully that won't go though. I mean, that's kind of outrageous.
Donald said, I was surprised also to hear Eric say Wednesday night that he does not believe there were issues with the elections. I mean, Eric changes his mind every 2 weeks about everything.
Well, and Eric Alden, she's talking about, who's running for the Colorado Republican Party chair. Right now we got Eric, and as far as I know, declared, then Casper. I think
Aaron Wood, maybe.
Aaron Wood, out of Douglas County, we've had him on the show. He's pretty good. I don't know.
He doesn't have a name recognition.
Yeah, the name recognition. I don't know that he has any experience. That's right. And so we'll see who else enters in. But, you know, I have a feeling that probably, you know, if Ronna McDaniel won so overwhelmingly there, I have a feeling that an establishment person might win here. I don't know. The Colorado grassroots are getting riled up. There are more and more people, I think, who are basically looking and saying, and even if they aren't maybe grassroots, but saying, we lost in Colorado. We lost overwhelmingly. Why would we want to have the same group of people, the same group of consultants, the same kind of, you know, people who are party leadership, so to speak, telling us what to do when we've been losing forever? And again, the thing is they don't care that we're losing. If you're Ronna McDaniel, you think you would resign, right? You would say, I'm so ashamed. We had a red wave coming, all the signs there, and we blew it. And, you know, so you'd think she would say, again, you know, get rid of the coach. The coaches say, well, it was my fault. They take responsibility. I mean, you don't ever hear that from her. So
Leo asks, have you heard the news that the No Labels Party is now an official party?
Yes, actually working with Carl. We talked about that before. Carl Honegger came on our show a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about that they were trying to. And we did a little bit of research into the No Labels Party, and a lot of them are, what's it, Common Cause? Is that Cause from that? They're, and which is basically a group of, let's see, bankers, develop. Well, it's money people. It's like a U.S. Chamber of Commerce only in miniature, essentially.
They're a left wing. Awful group.
Yes. And I think their goal, frankly, is to interfere in Republican elections.
I don't think so. I think what they want to do is now maybe use that. I think he was saying that maybe it's an excuse for them to have ranked voting. You have more parties.
Ranked choice voting. That's a good point, too. Anyway, so
they suck, too. Yes.
Yes, they do suck, too. And actually, I think Carl's working on doing some more stuff, and we're going to talk more about them because I think they're clearly want to play in Colorado elections. Charlene. Welcome, party.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Well, my only question is, should conservatives wait to be purged from the party, or should they just leave?
Once again, yeah, Charlene, as I keep saying, I'm becoming... It's becoming harder and harder and harder to
well,
come up
you know,
with.
It's like with Rona being reelected, that just continues the purge. I mean, it's just, you know, open season on conservatives. And it's so heartening, though. Ash that you had on has that Twitter space, and she's got it open right now. There's I've been on that for the last 30 minutes. And
oh,
there's about it's great. Oh, yes. Y'all should try that. The only thing, you don't get to comment, but you do get to raise your hand and talk. And then you, the host, get to control it just like you do now.
Right.
But it's very easy to maneuver if you just get on Twitter and set up an account, which is very easy also. But I'm so thankful for Twitter because there's so much communication going on there right now in these little chat groups. And everyone in that chat group there was a lady from Arizona, and some people are saying, well, we got to change the party, and, you know, we got to appeal to the middle, and we got to learn how to target minorities, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, we've done all that. And one lady spoke up from Arizona, and she said, yeah, we just did that in Arizona for Carrie Lake, and this is what it got us. And
right.
So everyone on that chat is like, you know, we can't take this abuse anymore. It's like the redheaded stepchild that you put in the barn and then you feed them scraps and then they come back in and they ask for lashes. You know, it's like
right.
The exit doors are not closed. You can leave this party. And more and more people on there were like, well, I was, you know, hoping that the party could make it and we would get change with whoever Lindell or Harmeet. But now this is the straw that broke the camel's back.
Where are they going? So where do you go?
Well, I mean, maybe we take over the No Labels.
Well, form the infrastructure for a new party or join in it with a party that already has infrastructure laid out.
Like
but mostly
like
it's
like
well,
who?
I mean,
constitutional party.
Oh yeah, they got a big infrastructure. Oh yeah, you can join them. That's no problem.
All right, so do that or bend over and take your lashes. I mean, which one are you going to do? You
right,
know?
And the question is, and I see your point, both of your points, because on one end, it's
I always see
everybody's points. It's a chicken and the chicken and the egg. I was a reporter for 40 years. It was a chicken. It's a chicken and the egg.
So you know how to be biased.
Yeah. Chicken and the egg kind of thing. Because on one end, you're right, Charlene, and Chuck, you are too. You don't want to go to this new party until the infrastructure's there, but the infrastructure isn't going to be there until enough people go to the party. And so, I mean,
well, you can lay the groundwork and the infrastructure, but you know, I just keep going back to, the tragedy and the hope written by Carol Quigley. The whole two-party system was devised to divide and conquer and to put you into right and left. And it's really top versus bottom. It's elite versus the masses. It's the ruling elite that's been in power for centuries, probably back to the Roman days. And
the
Celts tried to, you know, do their thing, and they conquered the Celts. But that spirit, that Celtic spirit, is still alive in so many people, especially in the United States.
Well, they didn't conquer the German spirit; those barbarian tribes came down and kicked them.
Well, that's another tribe altogether.
That's one of the downsides. But no, Charlene, yeah. You're right, though. I mean, and we see that it has in this country. Well, and I think it, like you said, it always was, but it has become abundantly clear. And I think Donald Trump sort of ripped the curtain aside. It really is the elites versus the rest of us, the globalists versus the rest of us.
Yeah. And the two-party system is a way to divide and conquer. And really, you know, everyone on that chat was saying, you know, until you address the elephant in the room, it doesn't matter how much you get out the vote, and it doesn't how much matter, you know, how we get people in positions of leadership locally, blah, blah, blah. It's until we can get fair elections that aren't electioneered like they have been, because they have figured out a way to do it, and the Republican Party.
Well, they figured out how to do it in Europe too. They don't have two parties, but the same results, same thing. Nothing's different.
Well, it's the elites. No, but Charlene has a point though.
Yeah, you're right, Chuck. I mean, they have, you know, three or four parties in England. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I mean
And so people keep on voting for Brexit, they keep on voting for less immigration, and they keep on getting reintroduced to Brexit, and they keep on getting more immigration, doesn't matter how they vote.
Well, exactly, because the voting doesn't matter anymore. So that's we've right. got to take another avenue. And that's what they were talking about on the chat room. So, and also, the great thing, Julie, is that just joining the chat and getting to talk, I gained like 10 new followers. So,
I will say that. No, we need to look into that. Time is the issue here. Although I will say this, Twitter is up a little bit back to its own thing. We all of a sudden yesterday lost. I mean, it's not perfect yet. There are a lot of issues there. Hey, and Sarlene, thank you. I see Randy Corbin has entered the waiting room. Thomas, if we could go ahead and admit him, then we can get him. This is Dr. Dunn. Okay. Boom. Got him. Randy, are you there?
Are you in your $1,300 a day room there in California?
Randy, do we got him in there? He was there.
So many buttons to unclick.
Oh, look at you. You look great. So yeah. I know you only have a few minutes because you're voting on things and everything. Your thoughts on the election.
Well, first thing, I want to just make sure everybody understands that RNC committee people are volunteers. And so we have to pay for our lodging and our travel and all of that. And I think our room rate here at this extraordinary place is like $250 or $300 a night. It is really amazing because we have 300 of the 400 rooms.
Ah,
so
they give you a bit of a deal. So are you asking for donations, Randy? GoFundMe page.
The RNC does not spring for this. They do, you know, they feed us a couple of meals and obviously put on the presentations and everything, but we're paying our own way here. So,
well, if you're only paying $250 a night, that's
it's
the deal.
A labor of love. So,
yeah, it's so remarkable.
So, your thought, Ronna McDaniel, like you said, 111 to Harmeet Dillon.
The old boss, the new boss is the old boss.
Yeah, what do you make of? I mean, can you want to tell us who you voted for or what your thoughts are?
Well, I voted for Harmeet Dillon. I went public with that last night. I put it up on Twitter. I think I reported it in Campfire, Colorado.
Oh God, not Campfire, Colorado. Hey God, talk about a commie website. Why are you reporting it there? Holy shit.
They asked. They're the only ones who asked. So I was happy to report there.
So were you I was surprised.
I was surprised at the size of the victory. You know, I thought it might get a second vote. I pretty much assumed Ronna would win. It was sort of the feeling here and seeing the amount of support behind the scenes for her. But I didn't expect it to be as lopsided as it was.
Right.
There's also been an awful lot of BS being told about Ronna McDaniel, things she's done and not done. So I will spend some time over the next few months trying to clean up some of that as well.
Good luck, because nobody wants to hear it.
We
heard, you know, why don't you spend some time and telling you about how great a job Hackett did? He shouldn't really be blamed for Russell Wilson's ones. Shilling for Ronna McDaniel is not going to win any brownie points. The people out in the weeds here are sick of Ronna McDaniel. They don't want to hear about her. They don't want to hear how great she is. They just said, great. The billionaires give to the RNC. And we now know it's just a captured group like Colorado. The donors own it.
People like you.
Yeah, except for brave people like you.
Yeah, I was proud to vote for Harmeet. And for me, it was important to listen to the voices of everyone in Colorado and outside that was just bombarding me with social media, emails, phone messages, and all of it. That's really important to me. But, you know, I think it's also important for people to understand that if 2022 had been an election year with the 400 million popular vote margin that Republicans won in all the right places, we would have won a presidential in 2022. And
we'll figure out we'll lose in 2022.
You've got to you got to make hay, you know, with whatever field you got. And this is the field we got. And we've got very important off year elections and presidential primaries coming. And we're going to need to get focused on that.
Why do you think, though, Randy? I mean, Charlie Kirk from Daily Wire had sort of a headline, the Republican Party hates you, you know, or maybe it was Red State. Why do you think, except for you, people like the 51 and maybe 55 people decide? I mean, I think the polls indicated that the average Republican voter wanted a change in leadership. Why did the people there once again say, we don't care what you pesky voters think, we're going to do what we want to do?
Yeah, it is hard for me to understand how so many on the committee. I mean, I love that one Lee Zeldin vote.
That's classic.
I want to know that rebel right now. But you know, it is definitely a closed loop, and there are more people that are working their way into positions like this. People like me, who want to bring the voice of the people, who want to push back. I tweeted out that my job now, since the RNC didn't listen to the voice of the people, is to make sure that the voice of the people is heard in the RNC with the current leadership as we go forward. And, you know, do we have to do a better job? Who do you blame for not winning? You know, do we blame ourselves? Sort of, because we needed to organize better. We needed to get more people on our own side. But it's just like, you know, elections have been for the last couple of decades. Typically, it's the establishment folks who take over, and it's a slow process to turn that around. I do think we're making progress. The energy from Turning Point USA and from young people and from just all the new people that have gotten in as precinct committee persons, right, and all of that, that's going to be felt as we move forward. And it just takes longer than we little humans down here in Earth time want to see it take.
No, I think, you know, I agree with you a little bit on that. I think that there is a change, and I think it's going to be more, because I think things are going to get worse for all of us before they get better. And people are waking up. And you're right. We wanted to turn around, you know, on a dime. And it took us a long time to get here. The establishment on both sides of the party have been working hard to get power and hold on to it. And they're not just going to go, oh, well, I guess the voters don't like us anymore, so we're going to, you
well,
know, gonna
yeah, take them, yeah. Then we can all become like Colorado, a real beacon of freedom and democratic control and homelessness and safe injection sites and
but,
everything
but think
else.
About, think about this, though, Chuck. What you've been preaching for a decade on ballot harvesting, they went to work on that in California, and they flipped Democrat seats in California. Right.
Need lots of money, and you need lots of paid people with lots of incentives. And because I've, you know, you cannot get your average just Joe to go. Somebody says, "Oh, you know, no." You it takes really dedicated troops.
I've been asking people around here the Chuck Bonniewell question: how do we find better billionaires? And I've actually been getting some answers. There's some prominent people that are working on that and understand that we've got to beat the Democrats at their game of ballot collection,
right,
in order to win anything significant moving forward. And, right, and I do believe that there is a movement that direction here.
Could one of them move to Colorado?
Yeah, then they can move to Colorado.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, listen, Randy.
Thanks, Randy.
Got a guest coming up. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Stay there. It's going to get really cold.
At 2:50 a night, don't come home.
It's going to be freezing below zero here. So I just, you know.
The ocean is gorgeous. It truly is. See you later, guys.
All right. Take care. Randy Corporan there.
He's great.
Took a long time to get here. Where is here, Julie, purging Vicky Tonkins from the GOP?
Yeah.
No, what I mean, though, is they, by that, I mean, Charlene, I don't think we should get, without going into whether we should or shouldn't leave, I don't think we should get discouraged because things don't turn around on a dime. I think we're looking at what's going on at in Congress of the Speaker, you know, and what the Republicans there are doing. And these are people who wouldn't have been elected a few years ago, right? And now they're there. And not only would they have not been elected, they certainly would have been marginalized and not had any power, and they would have been demeaned. And I mean, you know, and all these people instead are taking power. And I think there is reason to not just be hopeful, but there is reason to keep going. And it, not without getting into, should it be in the Republican Party
it's
or a different
nature
party?
Nature to be chirpy and optimistic.
No, well, it's, you know, and I was saying this to her, I said this last night, and this is going to be, and Thomas, you can go ahead and call Daniel Greenfield, but this is my belief here, that what we're talking about is protecting the Constitution, which I believe, and I think we believe, now listen, our God-given rights, right? And we've got Democrats who want to take away God-given rights. So I believe God is on our side. And I believe that God did not inspire us, that God is not giving us the passion and the purpose without a way to get it done. I believe God isn't doing this to just have us crash and burn, right? I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I do believe around a corner that we don't see, We have won. The people have won. We just have to, like Dory said, in Finding Nemo, keep on swimming. We just
keep
have to
keep on swimming. And after you get in the grave, keep on digging.
No. That's a pessimistic view. Anyway, that's just how I, that's how I look at it.
That's so, how she looked at it. So, you, so you've got from God's word to your ear. There it goes.
And throwing in some Dory from Finding Nemo.
Yeah, Finding Nemo. And we've got, now we've got from the Freedom Center, Daniel Greenfield wrote a great column on the
Front Page
magazine about the newest FBI incarcerated person.
Hey, Daniel, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
So basically, and I'd like you to kind of walk through it, we're talking about last weekend, the FBI arrested Charles McGonigal, who was investigating Trump for a fake Russia hoax that they had made up, himself for colluding with Russia. And it seems like from your column you laid out, basically everybody was colluding with Russia
except Trump.
Right? So why don't you walk us through it and what's going on with all of this?
Yeah, well, you know, what's the retirement plan for FBI agents involved in Russia? Well, apparently they go to work for Russia. This guy, latest accounts that we have from his mistress is that he had these bags and stacks of just $100 bills wrapped in rubber bands. He was getting just thousands of dollars in payments from cars outside of restaurants. This is as mafia, as sleazy as anything you can imagine. And this Charles McGonigal was the head of counterintelligence for the FBI in New York, which means he was pretty much at the nerve center of the FBI's counterintelligence efforts, dealing with the UN, with all these various foreign countries. And of course, he went to work with the enemy. This is not the first time we have seen this. There have been a series of cases at the FBI. So many Russiagate figures, people like Peter Strzok, proved to be incredibly corrupt, incredibly broken in their personal lives. All these people who have been held up as vanguards of integrity have proven to be nothing of the sort.
What do you think made the, I mean, I would suppose that this might not have been a shock to everybody in the FBI, what he was doing. Why do you suppose
why'd
they turn on him? Why didn't they
why did they give him up?
Why didn't they just hire him at MSNBC?
He is hired him. Oh, yeah. No, that was a different one.
Well, if he'd been a bit more careful, that probably would have happened. But he had an affair with a woman. The woman apparently turned him in. Mm. And, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog environment. Obviously, there are things you are completely okay with doing at the FBI, like, say, staging a fake investigation of your political opponent, but going to work for the Russians is still kind of frowned upon, at least officially. This has happened, of course, quite a bit. Anybody who remembers the name Robert Hansen, probably the worst national security scandal in American history. This was a top FBI guy who worked between the 70s and 80s. He worked for the Russians. He turned over names of all our agents, all our information, including our nuclear plans. And he got about $1 million for it from the Russians and some diamonds. And he had an affair, too, and he likes to visit strip clubs.
It's an affair thing. Those women are always screwing up your best
plan. It's not been any better at finding him.
Well, that's Roland. Do you see Hunter Biden, how any of that ties in? I mean, I can see where, I mean, he's getting what, money and diamonds and things like that from Moscow, the wife of the mayor of Moscow.
But you have to distinguish, it's important. He did not have a mistress. He was hanging around with hookers. So he didn't have to have, you know, didn't have a single one to just go after him. So that was an important distinction.
The FBI buries in part the Hunter Biden laptop story causes disinformation. They don't want anybody looking too closely at connections to Russia, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really what explains everything. If the people you're working for, people like the Clintons, the Bidens, are so incredibly slimy, so incredibly sleazy, they're so obviously in the take with China, Russia, Ukraine, Iran, whatever, then what do you really expect of the people who see this up front? Of course, they're going to go the same route. Problem is, we have a very fundamentally corrupt system in D.C. Trump accurately called it a swamp. It's one where everybody is for sale. And is it really surprising that the people who are in charge of watching them, of seeing all this happen day in and day out, the guys who are no doubt very well aware of what Hunter Biden was doing, are just joining the party?
Right. Well, and in the meantime, then they turn around and on Capitol Hill and say, oh, my God, we have to give all this money to Ukraine because Russia's the enemy.
That'll go well.
Yeah,
some corrupt ones and Zelensky retire a couple of his cohorts. Not arrest.
Not put them under jail. Just retire. You're tired. Go to your money. Go to Switzerland. Have a good time.
Not only the corruption, but just the duplicity, right? I mean, on one hand, oh, we hate Russia. They're the big enemy. But on the other hand, we're all in bed with them and making money off of them.
Of course. Russia, Ukraine, they're all pretty similar. They're all incredibly corrupt. And after the Cold War ended, we poured in there. There's supposed to be democracy in practice. Of course, the corruption became incredible. And it spilled over very much it does. By the way, I failed to mention, for example, that former FBI directors have routinely gone to work for the Russians, including former director Louis Freeh, who was Clinton's director, went to work for some of the same guys that McGonagall was working for. The difference was that he made it official. He wrote up the paperwork, whereas McGonagall was just taking money under the table.
Right. Well, you had a great line in your column where you said in Washington, D.C., retired generals go to work for the defense contractors, IRS agents go to work for corporations to tell them how to avoid taxes, and the FBI goes to work for Russia. I mean, that's just crazy, really.
Yeah, well, while you're employed with the FBI, you work for China.
Yeah.
When you're not employed, you work for Russia.
We built a government where you have public officials who build up all this expertise, and what do they do with it? Well, the moment that they retire, their career plan is to get into an adversarial relationship, go to work for the very people who want to know how to undermine these agencies. It's a completely screwed up system. It's incredibly corrupt, and it's another reason why nobody has any respect for the idea of integrity or ethics in D.C.
Right. Well, and you know, one thing in your column, you did, again, a great job of laying out, this wasn't just some random, weird, rogue FBI agent who just coincidentally had ties with Russia. You laid out all of the, as you said, other FBI people and the connections with the Clintons and the Bidens and their nonprofit organizations and their foundations.
To Bill Clinton from Moscow.
Right. And a light bulb went off in my head that something I'd kind of wondered about when you go back to the origins of the Russia hoax. A part of me was kind of like, why Russia? Right. Why not some other country? And I think this explains it. When they were making up the Russia hoax and inventing all of those lies, they were able to use the people that they were already
in bed with.
In bed with. Right.
Exactly. And a good rule of thumb is whatever the left is accusing you of are the things that they're doing. So that would have been a red flag for Russiagate. It tells you this is what the Clintons were doing. And it's not a surprise because the people were actually tracking this. They were aware of Uranium One. They were aware of Bill Clinton doing his Renaissance Capital speech for $500,000 and getting a congratulatory phone call from Putin. The Clintons had sold America to Russia because, you know, Russia was just paying.
They sold out off the table
to everybody else who was paying. But the moment, of course, they figured out this would be a good line of attack to undermine any attack on them.
Right. Well, and, you know, let me ask you, I mean, and I think, hey, Charlene, I think maybe somebody else has their mic on there. If you could kind of mute yourself. It seems to me one way to fix it, which, of course, will probably never happen, but would be to prevent these people from going to work for some of these agencies once they retire. I mean, how do we, if you can think of anything, I mean, exposing it is good, but how do we fix it?
Well, yes, we actually should prevent them from going to work for foreign governments. Of course, guys like McGonagall go to work for them under the table. And the people who make the rules are the ones who benefit from this. We've been talking about the FBI. So many politicians, so many retired politicians do the exact same thing. They start lobbying for foreign countries. They go to work officially or unofficially for foreign countries. So the problem is, how can the swamp drain itself?
Yeah.
Well, you point out Bob Dole worked for Oleg
Deripaska. I thought he was a nice guy.
Corrupt.
This is how they make money.
Yeah. Well, and as you point out, it's been going on for a long time. Well, I want to ask you, and you may not know about this, but one of the things I was reading about today was, have you seen this on this Hamilton 68, the kind of the fake company that was the media were using it to fact check for Russian bots, turned out to have been making up the whole thing. Speaking of Russia, have you
it was exposed by Twitter?
The Twitter bots. Have you seen that at all? Or
yes, it's not alone. We've known for a while that most of these so-called trackers were it's like they say 99% of statistics are fake. These were statistical games. They were putting together information that they arranged by being very selective about it. And then they would claim that any kind of conservative Republican trend was a work of Russian bots, which was a completely meaningless claim because pretty much Russian bots attached themselves to everything. So
right.
it was very selective and was very dishonest, and people have been calling it out for a while. Twitter files help shed more light on how this operates, but it's all been lies.
But what's amazing about it is their board of trustees or whatever they call them.
Yeah, just look at the board.
Mike Morelli, former acting CIA chief, Jeff Podesta. Just go down the line.
Oh, this is an unbiased organization. Well, you know, I was comparing it a little bit to it was like the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, the fact that the media relied on it, right? The Southern Poverty Law Center, I used to be a TV reporter, and there was a time when, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center would put out something about hate crime and hate groups, and this is the hate group, and everybody would report on it, knowing full well that Southern Poverty Law Center was just, you know, a shill and a front to and was making it up. And it seems to me worse than them making it up is the media, the mainstream corporate media, going ahead and using them as reasons to discredit conservative voices.
Well, one thing that has happened to the media, and I'm sure you're all quite familiar with this, is they've gotten very lazy. They do almost no regional research.
Yes.
Their stories
yes.
are written for them. Right. They just reprint press releases. And the Southern Poverty Law Center, whenever I looked into their claims, they were absurdly bad. At one point, they listed me as a hate group, one man. They listed a sign in Pennsylvania as a hate group. They put in absolutely no work into this, and the media put in no work into checking this. If a conservative says something, they will bring out their fact check. When it's their narrative, they just publish it straight out and never question it.
Right.
And the main person running this Hamilton 68 was a retired FBI agent.
So,
anytime you get a retired FBI agent, and that was the guy who was a commentator on MSNBC.
But yeah.
So FBI and MSNBC combines is always fraud.
Well, Daniel, let me ask you just sort of final questions for it, because you guys, I know at Front Page Magazine, you go there, you guys have so many great articles up there. What kinds of things are you working on? Where can people find out more about you, get more of your work?
So I have the honor of working for David Horowitz at frontpagemag.com. Currently, one of the things I'm looking at is how the IRS allows foreign countries to actually function as nonprofits in the United States, including the Confucius Institute, which is China's arm for getting into American colleges and schools,
yes.
The Iran lobby, all sorts of enemy organizations. You know, conservative nonprofits are very closely scrutinized. We face IRS audits. They face all sorts of targeting. For example, there was a Christian group, Christians Engaged, that had to spend, I think, 6 months battling the IRS for their nonprofit status. Meanwhile, enemy organizations, including China's Confucius Institute, have nonprofit status with no problems at all.
Yeah. There you go, figure. There you go. Well, right. Daniel, thank you for your time, and
yeah,
thank you for the work that you
do.
That was a great column.
It really was. Very educational. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. Daniel Greenfield there. Check it out. He's at the David Horowitz Freedom Center, also on Front Page Magazine. Real quick, I wanted to play, because we have a little bit of time, and I want to warn you, if you haven't seen it, it kind of gets a little, well, alarming at the end, the Paul Pelosi video, because there are some questions about it. And my big question is, I mean, talking about the FBI and the feds, why, when you see this, you ask yourself, why did they lie? They clearly knew that the police did not open the door, right? And yet they went ahead and kept saying that. And I'm wondering why. But if we could please play the Pelosi video. This is the police body cam video.
Yeah. Like I said, 2620, right?
No, 2640.
Oh. Yeah, it literally said in there. Hi.
Hey guys.
How you doing?
How are you?
What's going on, man?
Everything's good.
Hi. Drop the hammer.
Nope.
Hey.
What is going on?
I'm not getting an answer on call.
Oh, shit.
Medics code 3 as well. You got it?
Sorry, 14 Edwards, 10
All right. Now, a bunch of questions about that. First of all, and people can weigh in on this too. Obviously, the guy hit. I mean, and it's brutal. Out of the blue, before even police could act, hit him with the hammer. But a couple of things. Did you notice when they opened the door? So Paul Pelosi is wearing what appears to be his boxer shorts and a pajama shirt, right? The other guy, there's another video which you probably don't have time to show. He wasn't in his underwear. He was wearing the shorts and the sweatshirt that there's video of showing him breaking into the house. But what's weird is when I looked at it, and I looked at this and slowed it down, it's a little hard to tell, but I believe Paul Pelosi opens the door with one hand and then puts that hand on the hammer, but he's holding a drink in the other hand. Now, there are some people on Twitter who was like, he's got his priorities straight. You don't want to spill the scotch. And I'm sorry, that was tasteless. But it's, you got to raise the question. Why did they lie about it? It's clear. I mean, in the indictment, they said that the police opened the door. And then in the federal indictment, they say the door was open. Well, it's clear. To me, it looks obvious. Paul Pelosi, and at least if not Paul Pelosi, then the other guy opened the door. Probably Paul Pelosi, because if you play it slow, the guy has he's holding the hammer in his right hand, and he's got his other hand kind of behind Paul Pelosi. And it looks like Pelosi opens the door, then puts his hand on the hammer. So why did they lie about that? I mean, I have no reason what they were trying to protect. It is kind of weird because you would think if you were being held hostage and you were in fear of some guy attacking you with a hammer, you would put your drink down. I mean, clearly they had been in another part of the house. It took a while to get to the door, right? And they opened the door and he's holding his drink. So that's weird. And the tape that came out, Paul Pelosi was saying he didn't know the guy. And then you hear the guy say, I'm David, I'm his friend. And then Paul Pelosi again says, no, I don't know him. But he wanted to see Nancy or something. It's just, there are a lot of questions, I think, about this. If Paul Pelosi, if you play it and you slow it down, they're smiling. They open the door. The cops are like, and the cops, you can tell by their demeanor, they're not seeing anything that really disturbs them, right? They open the door. There are two guys standing there. One's in his underwear. Well, it is San Francisco. They're kind of like, hey, everything okay here? And the guy goes, yep, you know, and they're kind of smiling. And then I think Paul Pelosi puts his hand on the hammer and you can see the cop shine his flashlight on the hammer. And the cop goes, whoa, put down the hammer. And the guy goes, nope. And then he hits him. But there was no effort. I mean, initially, that scene did not look tense. It didn't look confrontational, right? I mean, it's like, so you still got to wonder what the heck was going on there. I mean, it's clear the guy broke in from the video. And I don't think this is a Tinder date gone wrong. I don't think, you know, that's pretty elaborate Tinder date to have somebody break in. But where was the security? You'd think that Pelosi's house would have some kind of security system that would go off if somebody breaks in their French glass window doors, right?
Do you know anything about the Secret Service?
Well,
go out and get drunk.
Well, you know, exactly. It's just kind of weird to me. And again, Paul Pelosi clearly is not feeling threatened by, he's walking around with a drink in his hand. If you've got some guy holding a hammer and you're worried he's going to hit you, you would at least put your drink down. I mean, I don't care how expensive the liquor in it was. You'd set it down, right? And so you could defend yourself. So I don't know what they're lying about. I don't know if Paul Pelosi has issues that they feared would reveal. Because remember, when they lied about it, they didn't just lie once about that the police opened the door or that a third person opened the door. When the NBC reporter, he got suspended, remember that? For saying what happened is exactly what we just saw happen. And so, and again, why are they granted to say, well, the FBI is lying on federal, you know, prosecution affidavits? Go figure, that would never happen. I mean, to me, that's just bizarre. And the whole thing, I think, raises...
Well, wherever they're hiding, it's pretty good because we can't really see what they're hiding. I mean, we really don't understand what they're hiding. So
right.
If they're hiding something, it's hard to figure out what it is.
Time is no, that's okay. That's show the other tape. This is the tape of the guy breaking in. So he's clearly breaking in. He's clearly doing that. So let's go ahead and play the tape break in.
Have our first look at the video on the attack of Paul Pelosi, husband of former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Look at this. Now, remember, I told you that there were going to be things other than the police body cam that would be released. This is the surveillance video outside the home. And that is the suspect, DePapp. And you see him, he put some items down. You see him breaking some glass and the fragments of glass that are breaking now. Emily, talk to me about this as evidence in the case. What?
Well, so keep in mind that this suspect is facing federal charges and state at the same time, right? In December, he was indicted, penalty 20 years of federal attempted kidnapping.
So here's my question. That took a little while. Once again, we know that the Capitol Hill police had, you know, were watching this, right? That's what the security camera's from, right? And so I'm sorry, this guy, and there's glass breaking, that's got to be making noise. He kind of is wandering up, he sets his bag down. It's just, how could nobody notice that? Do you know what I mean? And I mean, I could see Paul Pelosi kind of, if he's in bed going, what's that? What we also don't know is, I'd be curious to know how much time went by between the break-in. Paul Pelosi calls cops at 2:23, calls 911. The cops get there at
2 minutes later.
No, I think like 8 minutes later, at 31. Okay. Well, they get there very quickly. Yes. And he has time to call, him. He's on the phone with 911, but I don't know. And the time date doesn't show. I don't know. I'm glad they released it. And as always, you know.
Well, why were they hiding it? We don't know.
Right. And that's a bigger question.
Whatever they had successfully.
Why were they hiding it? And why were they lying about it? And hey, the midterms are over. So who cares? Everybody just go ahead and move on.
Who's looking for documents? He says.
That's right.
This
is from Leo. So he was in bed. He gets up, calls 911, and then pours a drink. Yeah, and then wanders around the house with the guy who's holding the hammer. I don't know. Hey, that's going to do it for us on this Party Friday. On Monday, we've got Robert Spencer coming on.
He had a great article.
What was it on? I forgot already.
So do I.
Okay. Well, anyway, Robert Spencer's coming on.
What was it on?
He had a great column. And that will do it for us on this Party Friday.
That'll come to me in a second.
Yeah, well,
so then we'll get off. We'll all right, take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Dementia. Yeah. Thank everybody. Thank everybody on Zoom. Thank you to Daniel Greenfield
Horowitz Center.
And the great guys at BBS. And we will see you all. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Take care.